Good afternoon. Welcome to BBSRadio.com. You are listening to the TNT News Hour. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour talking about stuff that you don't get on mainstream media. And in increasingly amounts, not on a lot of alternative media either. Seems like they're taking that over too, or at least they're trying. But here at BBSRadio.com, we intend to bring you the news that you don't hear elsewhere. News about politics, news about government, news about the economy, news about your health, news. Today is December, let's go back. Today is January the 16th. I'm still living in the past, I guess. And we've got news happening all over the world. And I'm going to keep some music going on in the background just to be a little bit different from mainstream. Now, what's going on worldwide? Well, there is a concerted effort on behalf of Israel and the powers that be to foment an attack on Iran. And we're looking at even the possibility of nuclear war if people don't awaken from their nightmare. And I want to quote a very interesting piece from the Reverend Chuck Baldwin. Chuck Baldwin is an evangelist, a minister, a man of God. He would consider himself, I guess, an evangelical Christian. And he has been writing a lot of what I call hit pieces, criticizing the government, talking about the election, talking about certain candidates who are running. Basically, he's not afraid to attack or tackle any problem that we have here in the United States or, for that matter, anywhere around the world. And I find his reports not just to be courageous, but also very informative. And I'm going to quote some things from a piece that actually came out yesterday, January 15th. And this piece is covering the reality, which is pretty much all over the world right now, this fomentation of war that I mentioned. And I quote the article, "If evangelical Christians are hesitant to support Ron Paul's candidacy for the Republican nomination for president, two reasons are usually proffered. He does not support Israel, and he wants to bring the troops home from Iraq. Unfortunately, many, if not most, of today's evangelical Christians have bought into the whole neocon warmongering mentality. Somewhere along the way, evangelicals have forgotten the historic Christian understanding of just war, not to mention our Savior's promise of divine blessing upon peacemakers. They have allowed President George W. Bush and his fellow warmongers to hijack the legitimate use of defensive war and turn it into a commitment to aggressive and preemptive war. If the United States continues on its current path of aggression, preemptive war, incessant nation building, empire building, and globalism, our country will collapse. If history teaches us anything, it teaches us that no superpower can long survive global war. The economic, moral, and spiritual strain on the nation would be more than it could long endure. In other words, Bush's war doctrine has put America on a crash course with disaster, and evangelicals are downright foolish to go along with it. Ron Paul is anything but a pacifist. He is a U.S. Air Force veteran, for goodness sake. He believes in Ronald Reagan's peace through strength philosophy. He believes in a strong military. He believes in defending the United States. That is not in question. Obviously, however, Ron Paul rejects nation building, empire building, preemptive war, and globalism. By the way, this is something the Republican Party also used to reject before George W. Bush came along and Please understand this is something that the vast majority, and I mean vast majority of the American people, also reject. If the GOP nominates a pro-Iraq war, pro-attack Iran, pro-preemptive invasion, pro-aggressive war candidate, they can kiss the November elections goodbye. The American people, except for the most fanatically loyal Bush supporters, are sick to death of American soldiers and Marines dying for Mideast oil and million-dollar Halliburton contracts and surrender your liberties because we are at war dribble. However, it is evangelical Christians' misunderstanding of Ron Paul's position on Israel that seems to be most problematic. To be sure, not all believers agree on the subject of Israel. Christians are divided between premillennialism, postmillennialism, and even amillennialism. For the most part, premillennialists, such as me, meaning Reverend Baldwin, believe that God will yet fulfill the Davidic covenant with the nation of Israel. Postmillennialists, on the other hand, believe that the church, which is the body of Christ, is the complete fulfillment of God's promises to Abraham and David. Regardless of one's particular view of eschatology, believers should be united in their support for protecting the sovereignty and independence of these United States. If this were really true, the vast majority of believers would enthusiastically support the candidacy of Ron Paul, as there is no one in Washington, D.C. who more faithfully defends the integrity of America's sovereignty and independence. The problem is, some Christians seem to give more loyalty and support to the government of Israel than they do their own country's independence and freedom. In this regard, it is incredible to me how evangelical pastors and leaders can continue to associate with and support radical Israel apologists such as John Hagee. His ranting about Jewish people having a special covenant with God and needing not to come to the Father through Christ, and even that Jesus never claimed to be Christ, is nothing short of blatant apostasy. Whether one believes in a future Davidic kingdom or not is immaterial to the preservation of America's freedom and independence. If God intends a future place and purpose for Israel, he is certainly capable of fulfilling that place and purpose. He will not need your help, my help, or Ron Paul's help. I know that is shocking to the pride and arrogance of many evangelicals, but it is true nonetheless. Does that mean that an American president should deliberately inflict harm upon the state of Israel, as long as they do not inflict harm upon us? No. No more than he should deliberately inflict harm upon any nation that does not inflict harm upon us. A free and independent nation, not to mention a nation whose roots are grounded in Christian philosophy, should seek only that which promotes peace and prosperity. Of all people, Christians should understand this. Ron Paul does understand this. Accordingly, Ron Paul rightly wants to return America's foreign policy to the established and historic principles of its founding documents and sentiments. That means free and fair trade with all and in entangling alliances with none, not even Israel. My dear Christian brethren, let's get real. America's policies towards Israel have not been a blessing to her. They have been a curse. George W. Bush and most other presidents during the last 40 years have treated Israel like the proverbial red-headed stepchild. For example, America continues to furnish Israel's enemies with three times more aid and assistance than it does Israel. Three times. Is that being a blessing to Israel? America gives unflinching and magnanimous, or let's say magnanimous, pardon me, I made up a new word there, magnanimous support to militant Muslim governments such as Saudi Arabia. There is no nation in the Middle East that has harbored, trained, supplied, and supported more terrorists than Saudi Arabia. Is that being a blessing to Israel? In addition, every time an American president wants to meddle in Middle Eastern affairs, he insists that Israel give up land for peace. President Bush is doing that very thing anew and afresh at this very moment. Is that being a blessing to Israel? Let me assure the reader, or the listener, if he or she needs assurance, that Israel knows how to defend itself. In fact, Israel has over 300 nuclear weapons. Israel has enough weaponry and nuclear capability to take out any threat to its sovereignty that any Arab nation or group of Arab nations could mount against it. Herein lies another problem. It is heavy-handed, dictatorial, do I say, foreign policy from Washington, D.C. that prevents Israel from defending itself. Before Tel Aviv can do anything, it must come hat in hand to Washington for permission. If Iraq was a legitimate threat, Israel could have taken out Baghdad, Saddam Hussein, and his entire army with little difficulty. The same is true right now with Iran. If Iran is a legitimate threat, Israel could launch whatever attack is necessary to defend itself. It should not need Washington's permission. Israel is a sovereign nation. It should have the right to defend itself as it deems necessary. Frankly, it is none of Washington's business. The truth is, Israel's perennial precariousness is a direct result of Washington's constant interference. Ron Paul would put an end to Washington's deleterious and insatiable appetite for nation-building and entangling alliances. The result would be a stronger Israel and a more stable Middle East, not to mention the lack of resentment and hatred that results from the worldwide perception that America is an arrogant and bullying country. Furthermore, Christians need to understand that Israel, or I should say Jewish, interests are not always harmonious with the interests of Christianity or the interests of the United States. Israel certainly did not act in a friendly fashion when it attacked the Navy intelligence ship, the USS Liberty, in 1967. That attack was the second deadliest against a U.S. vessel since the end of World War II. The attack also marked the single greatest loss of life by the U.S. intelligence community. 34 U.S. servicemen were killed and 173 were wounded in that attack. In addition, Israel is often found to be engaged in espionage with the United States. Should America turn a blind eye to such activities? Of course not. Beyond that, Hebrew Christians are still pretty much regarded as second-class citizens in Israel. There is no freedom of religion for Christians in Israel. I've spoken at the only two Baptist churches in Israel at the time, the First Bible Baptist Church in Jerusalem and the Bible Baptist Church in Bethlehem. The vast majority of the church's members were Palestinian or Arab. They were not Jewish. Most of the opposition to Christianity in Israel comes from Jews, not Arabs. Evangelical Christians in the United States also need to seriously consider the impact of America's actions upon the Christian missionaries throughout the world, but especially in the Middle Eastern world. There are numerous Christian missionaries throughout the Muslim states. Ask any of them, and they will tell you that America's meddlesome foreign policy makes their job harder, not easier. What I am saying is that Ron Paul's position on Israel is not problematic for Israel's future security or prosperity, and neither is it problematic for America's future security and prosperity. In fact, Ron Paul's foreign policy is compatible with both historic American principles, not to mention constitutional government, and with deeply regarded Christian principles. The real problem is that many evangelical Christians have themselves lost their appreciation and understanding of these principles. If you enjoyed this column and want to help Reverend Baldwin distribute these editorial opinions to an ever-growing audience, you can send a check or money order to Chuck Baldwin Live, P.O. Box 37070, Pensacola, Florida. Zip code is 32526. I'll read that one more time in case you were writing that down. Chuck Baldwin Live, P.O. Box 37070, Pensacola, Florida 32526. Now, I must mention to you that Chuck Baldwin is unaware that I intended to read this. And if he's not listening to the TNT news today, he doesn't even know that it was reported. But I found that this was worth sharing. And it's not really even purely a Christian issue. And I would like to expound a bit on some of the points that Mr. Baldwin actually made, because he did accurately describe some of what's going on. He did not go into much detail as to why this is so or what corroborates this information. Now, he mentioned the Attack Us Liberty, and it has come out in historical publications, we'll say, that Lyndon Johnson was allowing that attack to go on, that he had ordered a stand down by the military, and that the ship was not to be rescued. And in fact, he had made comments to the effect that he was anticipating it being sunk. So we must carefully look at our leadership and what these motives entail. Now, why would a president condone the sinking of a U.S. ship? Why would an American president do that? Why would an American president allow the Israeli military to engage in such an activity when we support Israel? Well, you would have to have a much, much larger picture of what's going on in terms of our perceptions of why Israel was created and what political role Israel plays. Now, I'm not an expert on Israel, and yet my research tells me that, number one, the creation of the State of Israel in 1948 had everything to do with the Rothschild dynasty, their involvement in building a world court building there, in the shape of a Christian cross, and just the general sense of how the Jewish community, the Jewish bankers and the Jewish politicians and the Jewish political action committees all take a stand fighting for the Jewish people. In reality, they are presenting themselves as the true Judeans. We're talking about the people that crossed the Red Sea with Moses when they fled Egypt. We're not talking about the Jews or the Zionists that presented themselves as if they were the true Judeans. So when we use the term Jew, we are really referring to those that are masquerading as Judeans, the original Israelites. Now, the creation of the State of Israel obviously had great spiritual significance, and this is where the Vatican and the other secret societies come in, and the fact that these wars against supposed allies, or these attacks, such as the attack on the USS Liberty in 1967, would have been orchestrated by someone that was definitely trying to ramp up discord in that region of the world. It wasn't so much that it was the United States, unless there was an insider's political message being delivered. Of course, They find our soldiers to be quite dispensable in their games and their own mind control and their own struggles over money and weaponry and drugs and all the things that they engage in, which are their cash cow. We are left with the remnants of these things, which become first political events and then historical events that we refer to. But there's never any serious investigation into it. Now, how could we permit Israel to attack our ship and not retaliate? After all, supposedly Al-Qaeda took down several buildings in New York City and part of the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., not to mention four airplanes and thousands of people, and we took our time until they got strategically situated to attack Afghanistan and Iraq, and it had nothing to do with Al-Qaeda. They were in neither place at the time. And those of us who have gone down the rabbit hole in regard to 9/11 know that's the case. And were we to launch a full-scale investigation right now, all these facts would come out. In fact, the true facts about why we are in Iraq and Afghanistan would come out. And they're related to drugs, and they're related to bank robberies, amongst other things. Now, without going into all of that, it doesn't make sense that we would wait several years to go in and attack when we were attacked. In fact, it wouldn't even make sense that our government, clandestine, would meet with the members of Al-Qaeda, which implies that Al-Qaeda was a creation of our intelligence arm, specifically the CIA. But it's also been reported, Ted Gunderson reported to J. Orland Grabby, a school teacher who was also a journalist, that a meeting went down with Osama bin Laden and intelligence people way back in 1986 in Sherman Oaks, California. A clean-shaven bin Laden wearing a sport coat and a sport shirt was taken to military bases, taken on a shopping trip, basically, to receive Stinger missiles and Red Mercury and computers and computer software and cash. In the presence of Ted Gunderson and Ralph Ulberg and Michael Reconosciuto, this has been well documented, and I have written about it as well. Now, how can these people be our enemies, and at the same time we're doing business with them? A number of years prior to our attacks, and we can say, well, they changed, and you know, they were, their purpose at the time was to promote freedom and to promote democracy in some of these Arab countries. These people are not interested in a democracy. But if they were, we would better serve ourselves if we were to allow them to work through their own problems instead of forcing upon them our forms of government. After all, our government has well proven to our people that it can't function properly in the context of America alone. So, what am I getting at here? Now, Reverend Baldwin is obviously pointing out that the support of Israel, and for the reasons that pastors like John Hagee, who are literally asking for us to bomb Iran. I mean, these are my understanding of men of God is that they're to be promoting peace, not fomenting war. And those down there in San Antonio better wake up. Now, who's behind John Hagee? Well, that kind of propaganda coming from a church pulpit has everything to do with being a registered 501c3 corporation, a tax-exempt corporation that has to follow the dictates of the government. And particularly in this case, I would venture to guess that FEMA and the NSA are coaching Reverend Hagee on his policies, putting that information out there, because if you repeat a lie often enough, it becomes a current event. It becomes the truth, in essence, even though it's mind control and brainwashing. Now, you're not hearing about this in that light, in that context, in the mainstream news, because it outright points to who's corrupt and who's fooling who. An interesting a piece of information that came out about a year ago, January, when it was reported by Captain Eric May and his ghost troopers that there was going to be an attack, a false flag event, on Texas City, Texas. In fact, there was one this past year, toward the end of the year, but it was not of the nature it was intended to be. Back in January or February. Now, there were FEMA vehicles and the Department of Homeland Security was there, and they were in Texas City, and for those of you who don't know where that is, it's just outside of Houston, and it's where the majority of the oil refineries are. And for them to be conducting terrorist drills, nuclear attack drills there, stunk to high heaven, just like the drills that they were running even on the day of 9/11 in New York City and elsewhere. They tipped their hat off. They, in other words, they let us know that something was up, and they flaunt this right in front of our faces as if we are just going to trust that they're protecting the country. Well, while this was going on in Texas City, and the FEMA and Department of Homeland Security was seen all over that part of the state with their vehicles and their satellite dishes and all of their communications equipment and a military presence, people from FEMA were going to California telling bank directors that if customers came into the bank to withdraw funds or to withdraw anything from their safety deposit boxes, that they were told they were not allowed. They were not permitted to access their safety deposit boxes. That's a very, very strange thing to tell somebody in a bank, first of all, in California, when these activities were planned for Texas, for Texas City. In fact, a little-known fact, but one I talk about quite a bit, is the twin concept. That goes way back to the days of the German Nazis, Dr. Joseph Mengele, and Himmler, and the SS people were all enthralled with the concept of twins, that if they could evoke pain in one twin or do an experiment on one twin, the other one would react or have some sort of sympathetic feeling because of the close bond that twins supposedly have. So they did a lot of very sadistic experimentation with twins. They duplicate financial books to money launder. They take tangible assets and they hypothecate those assets into off-the-book transactions. And that's what we have going on right now in New York City and other places around the world, which is really why the economy is failing. You won't hear about that in the mainstream media, but it has everything to do with countries like Israel and Germany and France and England. They're all involved in this. This is a script that they're working out. Now, the Jews or the people of Israel or the Zionists are getting the blame, and yet there are still a couple of elements, and Chuck Baldwin did not mention this in this article, that are actually playing a role in pulling the strings. They are the puppet masters in the background, and we're talking about the Vatican and Opus Dei and the Jesuits. The Jesu Society has a dark control over the Vatican and really dictate the policy that goes on, not only there, but in our country as well. And they do this through institutions, and they do this by infiltrating government. And, of course, they are in control of the Vatican. So they are in control of St. Patrick's Cathedral, which is the U.S. Vatican. And they are in control of Fordham University and George Washington University and Boston College, all monitors for the Jesuit progression of mind control, brainwashing, and implementation of these secret policies that ultimately get pushed onto the presidency and the whole administration and all of the federal agencies. Their wishes, their mandates are carried out very carefully, very methodically, piece by piece, and while they're quick to blame Hollywood, and quick to blame the Jewish bankers who deserve the blame that they're getting, they are secretly controlling the assets or orchestrating what goes down in terms of false flag events. So Pastor Baldwin did put his finger on the fact that that Israel is secretly involved, the intelligence agencies, and we're speaking about the Mossad. Mossad is their intelligence agency who work hand in hand with the CIA, who work hand in hand with the FBI and the British MI6 and the British MI5. Now, what people don't realize is when we think of this is a British agency or this is a French agency or this is an Israeli agency, that they're operating on behalf of their countries. Well, if that was the case, our CIA would be operating on behalf of our country here. But they're playing a script together, and it's a wider script. It has to do with the global changes that they want to make, the global control that they're seeking. Now, they've basically got that control through the financial system, although the financial system is very corrupt, and there's a struggle going on between what we could say is the East and the West. You have it's like an Illuminati 1 and Illuminati 2, a split-off faction. The Illuminati 2 faction is the one that's trying to take control of the whole Western Hemisphere, thus the purpose of the North American Union. Why are we getting interference from the Israelis? Well, the bankers, the big bankers, the Jesuits, these big societies, these secret societies that are controlling the people with the most money are not going to be left out of the loop. But remember the old saying, there is no honor among thieves. And as writer Christopher Story refers to these people, they are rats in a sack fighting for the same food, the type of food that rats would find in a sack. And so Pastor Baldwin has hit the nail on the head. Of course, we would hope that anyone hearing this or reading this would do your own research and find out that these are not exaggerations. But they're a compilation of research by others and myself that clearly points out that this is really the reality, that they're fomenting more war. Now, how do we know Israel is in this position? Why would they be in such a position to force the United States to attack Iran? And if you have been following the saga of the trillions of dollars that's bouncing around the globe like a ping pong ball, then you would have heard in the last few days that it's been learned through tracing the funds with very sophisticated promise software that Israel is now in possession of somewhere between $43 and $44 trillion that was illegally wired to them, and probably by some trader in the United States. And keep in mind that these are mirrored funds. These are duplicated funds. Remember, I mentioned the twin principle. By the way, just to expound on that for a moment, we have New York, New York, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, Texas City, Texas, Florida City, Florida, Kansas City, Kansas, Oregon City, Oregon, on and on. In fact, every major city in the country has a twin city, a city whose name matches the state. And these are going to be target areas for false flags, or at least we should be vigilant that those could be. This is how they use their twin concept. Let's look at the bridge that fell down a few months ago in Minnesota, Minneapolis, Minnesota. There again, in fact, Minneapolis-St. Paul is called the Twin City. Do you think it's an accident that they call it that? By no means. It designates and really forecasts or signals what some of their plans are. They were able to take that bridge down using most likely pulse energy weapons, probably from outer space or somewhere in the upper atmosphere. However, there has been no investigation. I've not heard of anyone being culpable for allowing that bridge to deteriorate to the point to where it could collapse. That's probably because it was taken down intentionally. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this stuff out if you watch, but they pretty much figure that they've got us dumbed down. Why is it that the media is so intent on blasting Congressman Ron Paul's candidacy? Why is it that they have to ask him questions by attacking him in the debates, phrasing questions or prefacing questions with statements like, you don't really think you're electable, or asking, do you think you're electable, as if that's an improbability? And that may be so, but that's not the courtesy being afforded the other candidates as well. Do you honestly think Rudy Giuliani can be elected? Why don't they pose that question to him that way? Now, we have an up and down flip flop going on. And this is the next part of, I could go on with Pastor Baldwin's news here, but I'll spare you for the moment. Breaking news is that the grannies that this is a group of women out of the Deep South area, somewhere around North Carolina. The Granny Warriors, I think they're called, have raised somewhere near $63,000 through PayPal. Now, I heard early this morning, by the way, this money is raised to meet the $55,600 minimum escrow account to initiate a recount of the ballots in the New Hampshire election, which just occurred a few days ago. There are questions about the differences between the exit polls and the actual vote count. For instance, Ron Paul was getting very high ratings on the exit polls from 36% and upward, and his total vote ended up being 8%. Of course, they used the Diebold voting machines there, and I heard that possibly there might be another machine. I think it's ENS or ES is another voting machine manufacturer that may have been involved in that. But the donations came through to the Granny Warriors, and all of a sudden their PayPal account was frozen. So their PayPal account right now is up in the air. I'm not clear on what's happening. However, this is not good news to hear that this is allowed to happen. And of course, we constantly have someone popping up along the way who is just out of the clear blue sky trying to stop any effort to vindicate a candidate. And it may not be that Ron Paul won the state, but at least let's have an honest, open, fair election. And if these candidates are all that, I mean, the simplest question is, why worry about who gets voted in? But you see, they have agendas. They have secret agendas. And so many people are slow to coming to the realization that they're going to do whatever they have to do to meet their timetables. They're talking about taking your rights away totally. And there's so few people really aware that that's what's going on. It's mind-boggling how many people are still asleep. But we know those who are listening to the TNT News Hour are wide awake. So, that's the news on the front right now. That's the most interesting thing I heard. I found it interesting that five little old ladies could basically get people across the country behind them in reviving this vote count issue in New Hampshire, and we wish them the best. We could probably say a prayer or two for them as well. And if you've got outrage about this, by all means, contact PayPal and let them know what you think. Send them an email. Okay, on another light now, last week I had written an email to Fox News, and it got quite a bit of publicity, actually, which is what we hope. Of course, Fox News didn't air it, and they didn't even answer it. And I kind of told them off, and I'm going to save you the trouble, but Canadacci at educate-yourself.org also published this. In fact, he gave it a title, and he referred to it that Don Nikoloff lambastes Fox News. And this was over the exclusion of candidate Ron Paul from the New Hampshire debate. They actually excluded a couple of candidates, I believe, or some withdrew, but the point is that we have a viable candidate in Ron Paul, and at every turn, the media is doing its best to destroy his reputation or to destroy his credibility, and to criticize those or to mock those who support him. You should be outraged by that, and hopefully, if you haven't heard about it or haven't had the time to sit down and do it, write an email. You can send it to feedback@foxnews.com. That's what I did, and it's on a number of websites around the world now. And I guess it's refreshing to people to know that we are taking a proactive stance and speaking out. We need to do that more. It does have an impact. And just to paraphrase what I discussed in that letter, in that email to Fox News, I let them know basically that it's quite obvious that they're nothing more than a propaganda arm for the government and for the intelligence agencies, and that they're absolutely ridiculous and self-serving for one thing, but disingenuous and even conspiratorial. I slammed William Crystal a bit, and I mentioned his involvement in the Project for a New American Century, which was the plan that led us into the Iraq War and the war in Afghanistan and the events of 9/11. And if you haven't read that and you haven't heard about it, please Google Project for a New American Century, or simply Google PNAC. You can find the document in a PDF, and it clearly describes how, and that what gets me is that someone put it on the web, that they act like this is such a righteous think tank that they can just expose these plans and that we can do nothing about it. Well, we can. And I suggest that we don't let these things just fall by the wayside and become forgotten. That's what the brainwashing and the mind control is all about. They want us to forget this. They know we have short memories. But don't expect to see it on TV. Still, you can write to them and you let them know how you feel. And I can't, it was a pretty sarcastic and biting letter that I wrote, and it's actually got a bit of humor in it as well, because I did not mince words in it. So you can read the letter. I think we still have it posted somewhere on the TNT news page. Mad Dog posted it there the day it came out. And again, Ken Adachi had it posted pretty recently on educate-yourself.org. It's also a great site to visit if you want to find out what's happening with chemtrails, or if you want to find out what's happening with the national, or what they call the Real ID Act. He's got some, there's some recent news here that I want to share with you in regard to that. This comes courtesy of one of Ken's readers. There is a specific reference to the Real ID Act. If you go to Yahoo News, or actually it's news.yahoo.com / S as in Sam, / AP, / 2008-0111, / Then I'm going to give you the rest of this here. AP_on_go_ca_st_PE /secure_driver_s_licenses. Now, I'm going to go to that site right now. And of course, you can find this link if you go to the news section. New ID rules may complicate air travel. And this is dated January 11th, Washington. Millions of air travelers may find going through airport security much more complicated this spring as the Bush administration heads toward a showdown with state governments over post-September 11th rules for new driver's licenses. Now, that just grabs me kind of funny. It reminds me of the passport that they supposedly found two blocks from the World Trade Center. I mean, this is just idiotic. Anyway, I'm going to go back into this. I don't even know why I went there other than, you know, that these people were able to get on the airplanes and they weren't on the passengers list. And here now they want to document our driver's licenses and they want to, you know, they've got to have the mark of the beast on our driver's licenses. That's what it's all about. And they will become total tracking devices as well. By May, the dispute could leave millions of people unable to use their licenses to board planes, but privacy advocates call that a hollow threat by federal officials. Now, what if you're blind? What if you don't, Ivan, you don't have a driver's license? Does that mean you cannot fly? Okay. Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff, who was unveiling final details of the Real ID Act's rules on Friday, said that if states want their licenses to remain valid for air travel after May 2008, those states must seek a waiver indicating more time to comply with the legislation. Chertoff, and by the way, I add that it's alleged that he has dual Israeli citizenship, that he actually has an Israeli passport. Chertoff said that for any state which doesn't seek such a waiver by May, residents of that state will have to use a passport or certain types of federal border crossing cards if they want to avoid a vigorous secondary screening at airport security. Ridiculous. Ridiculous. Okay. Now, so we have more restrictions being put on us here. For what reason? What have we done to deserve this? Okay? This is like blackmail or extortion. The last thing I want to do is punish citizens of a state who would love to have a real ID license but can't get one, Chertoff said. But in the end, the rule is the rule as passed by Congress. The plan's chief critic, the American Civil Liberties Union, there they are, called Chertoff's deadline a bluff and urged state governments to call him on it. Now let me pause for a moment there, folks, and mention that the ACLU is the secret little legal firm, the legal arm that they use to take away all of our constitutional rights. They take God out of the schools, they take God out of the courtroom, and they have nothing to do with American civil liberties. It's just the under the table version of the same intelligence scams that they play on us through the mainstream media and through the banking industry and through the Security Exchange Commission. Oh, okay, back to the article. Are they really prepared to shut those airports down? Which is what effectively would happen if the residents of those states are going to have to go through secondary scrutiny, said Barry Steinhardt, director of the ACLU's Technology and Liberty Program. This is a scare tactic. 17 states have passed legislation or resolutions objecting to the Real ID Act's provisions, many due to concerns it will cost them too much to comply. Well, forget about the infringement of privacy or forget about the Orwellian state. They're worried about the cost. The 17, according to the ACLU, are Arkansas, Colorado, Georgia, Hawaii, Idaho, Illinois, Maine, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, New Hampshire, North Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Washington. Maine officials said Friday they were unsure if their own state law even allows them to ask for a waiver. Oh, my goodness. It certainly seems to be an effort by the federal government to create compliance with real ID, whether states have an interest in doing so or not, said Don Cookson, spokesman for the Maine Secretary of State's office. The September 11 attacks were the main motivation for the changes. The hijacker pilot who flew into the Pentagon, Hani Hanjour, had four driver's licenses and ID cards from three states. Now, I may be stupid, but what do those driver's licenses have to do with the fact that the guy flew an airplane into a skyscraper? I mean, did he flash his driver's license to anyone? And if he had the driver's license with him, and they had asked him to show it, would it have at all impaired his ability to fly that airplane into the World Trade Center? And that is, if he did it. Because there were many of the terrorists, the 19 terrorists, at least 11 of them, and very angry that their names have been used as a ruse, as the scapegoats and the perpetrators of the events that took place on 9/11. So this Real ID Act stinks to high heaven and should be flushed down the toilet with the rest of their propaganda. I go on. The Homeland Security Department and other officials say the only way to ensure an ID is safe is to check it against secure government data. Whoa, that sounds loaded. Secure government data? We have IDs stolen. Literally millions of IDs have been stolen. Millions. Under the guise of, we had to check this computer out, or something happened, they misplaced these records. We're talking about hospital records, bank records, veterans records, and we need the government to secure this data. Critics such as the ACLU say that creates a system that is more likely to be infiltrated and have its personal data pilfered, which is what I just said. We have a track record of that. Nothing's done about this. These thefts of our personal data are being used to launder money, to do bogus real estate transactions, and virtually around the world. It's an international ring. So please don't tell me that we need the government to secure this information for us. Under the rules announced Friday, Americans born after December 1st, 1964, will have to get more secure driver's licenses in the next 6 years, over which time the new requirements would gradually be phased in. Now, what is the difference between someone born in 1963 and 1964? How they come to this, I do not know. Okay, well, but that's government. They know. They know best. A key deadline would come in 2011, when federal authorities hope all states will be in compliance and the regulations would not take full effect for all Americans until 2017. Well, if it's not going to take full effect, then why does it have a deadline of 2011? Are they speaking about letting illegal aliens in? Is that who we're talking about here? This just doesn't make sense. To make the plan more appealing to cost-conscious states, federal authorities drastically reduced the expected cost from $14.6 billion to $3.9 billion, a 73% decline, said Homeland Security officials familiar with the plan. So evidently, roughly somewhere in the neighborhood of $10.5 billion doesn't look like it's going to be embezzled or at least applied to the program. They can use it for something else. By the year 2014, anyone seeking to board an airplane or enter a federal building would have to present a real ID compliant card, with the notable exception of those older than 50, Homeland Security officials said. Well, I guess I'm exempted. And a few of the listeners are exempted from that. Of course, federal building, what is that, a post office? Oh, my goodness, you mean I've got to show my ID now to go drop a letter in the mailbox or buy a postage stamp? Whew! The over 50 exemption was created to give states more time to get everyone new licenses, and officials say the risk of someone in that age group being a terrorist, illegal immigrant, or con artist is much less. Ho, ho, ho! So are you telling me that that some of our presidents who are over the age of 50 are less of a risk of being con artists? My goodness, let's not elect anyone under the age of 50. Let's make sure we do not do that. Oh, and that statement is totally false from if we look at history. By 2017, even those over 50 must have real ID compliant to board a plane. Now, that's if we even have planes by that year. Oh, among other details of the real ID plan, the traditional driver's license photograph would be taken at the beginning of the application instead of the end, so that if someone is rejected or failure to prove identity and citizenship, the applicant's photo would be kept on file and checked if that person tried to con the system again. Oh, so if you're, in other words, an illegal alien can get the card, at least they're pushing for that, but if anyone else tries to get a card under their real name and they feel that you're trying to con them, that you can be forbidden from getting the card, which means that you cannot fly and you cannot enter a post office to buy a stamp. So you cannot send airmail, I'm guessing. The cards will have three layers of security measures, but will not contain microchips, as some had expected. States will be able to choose from a menu which security measures they will put in their cards. Now, what are these security measures, I wonder? After Social Security and immigration status checks become nationwide practice, sounds like the Gestapo again, officials plan to move on to more expansive security checks. State DMV offices would be required to verify birth certificates, check with other states to ensure an applicant doesn't have more than one license, and check with the State Department to verify applicants who use passports to get a driver's license. So we have here just a concerted effort to control all of society taking place. And they're using this phony war on terrorism and now the economic catastrophes in this country as a pretext for demanding these national or these real IDs. Well, hope you enjoyed today's TNT News Hour. I'm Don Nikoloff. We've run out of time. And I'll be back next week, or you can listen tonight to my Evident Footprint show at 10 p.m. Pacific Time. Thanks for listening in. Send your news items to TNT News Hour at the BBS page. Thank you very much. Have a good day. Thank you.